once again to Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola, the podcast, a weekly podcast on the Amazon television series Fallout, specifically season one. It was released all at once, but we are doing an episode weekly, and today is the finale episode that we're going to discuss. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Doing all right. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how are you?
I'm good.
And in the state of Missouri?
That would be me. I'm Kevin.
Kevin, how are you?
Just peachy.
And in the province of Alberta, Canada?
It's Sean, and I hope everyone's doing well.
Indeed. All right, so for folks who are curious, today is June 4th, 2024, that we're recording this, and it should be released on June 6th. So why I'm telling people that, I don't know, except that some people are curious when we record our episodes, because sometimes they're not released immediately, and this one will be released 2 days later. We are here as part of the Dark Discussions News Network, which is www.darkdiscussions.com. It is a website of numerous podcasts and news and such like that. Basically, we have a bunch of podcasts, and we talk all about movies and television series and stuff. We do have an email at darkdiscussions@aol.com, and that email is for all the podcasts on the network. So when you do email us, and you're emailing specifically for this podcast here, just put Nuka Girl or Fallout or Nuka Cola in the subject, and then whatever your subject is, and we will read your email on the podcast. Specifically putting that in the subject lets us know that your email is specific for this podcast and not one of our other podcasts. We do have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where you can join in the conversation or start a discussion or a conversation yourself. And we do have a couple of feeds where you can find the podcast besides the website. You can find the podcast wherever podcasts are found, such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts, under two different feeds. The first feed is Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola Podcast, and that has this podcast on that feed. And then the other feed you can search is for Dark Discussions Podcast, which is a podcast feed that includes not only this podcast here, but all the podcasts that your co-hosts that you hear tonight participate in. So it includes the Dark Discussions podcast, as well as all the other podcasts, again, that we participate in. We do have some other stuff, but the website, once again, is darkdiscussions.com. And Sean, what else can people find on that website?
You can find the link for Patreon, which is a way that people can support their favorite creators financially. So if you are able to, click the link and go on to Patreon. Any amount that you're able to donate each month is appreciated. Even a dollar a month makes a difference for us. The podcasts are released free across all the different providers, but there's a ton of behind-the-scenes expenses to keep everything going. So anything you can donate is appreciated. For every $5 a month that you're able to donate, you'll get to pick a movie that will go into a draw then every quarter. And if it's picked in that draw, then there will be an episode that will review it, whether it's on the Dark Discussions main feed or one of the sister podcasts, depending where it falls genre-wise and all that good stuff. Again, understanding these times are tough financially. If you're not able to help us that way, you can still help us by sharing our podcasts on your social media feeds, as well as whichever providers that you're downloading our stuff from, rate and review, because that makes a difference for us as well. And anything you're able to do along those lines is appreciated. And thank you for listening and giving us the forum to be able to do this for all the different shows and stuff that we get to enjoy.
You there, Phil?
What happened? I was on mute. let me say what I just said that no one could hear. And that would be greatly appreciated any way you can help. So with that stated, I guess we could discuss our episode, because what we do here is talk about the latest episode of Fallout that we've been watching, because, again, it all came out at once. And this is the eighth episode, which is also the season finale episode that we're going to discuss. It's called The Beginning. It is directed by Wayne Yip, and he's a British director that's done Doctor Who and The Lord of the Rings Amazon Prime series. He is directing based off a script by Gursimran Sandhu, and there's not much information on him, so I don't have anything to say about him, or her, honestly, I feel terrible because I have no idea if Gursimran is a boy or a girl name. The episode means that this will probably be our last episode of the podcast until the season comes back for a second season, which has been announced that it will. But that doesn't mean you have to lose us, because, again, we are doing a weekly podcast called the Doc Discussions Podcast, which is a podcast we'll talk about when we finish up at the end of the episode and whatnot, and how you can still find us and reach us after the podcast goes on hiatus until season two. So what we do is we talk about everything and anything related to the episode, because we're assuming everybody has watched the show and this episode too, and are here to listen to after show discussions, hearing other opinions, maybe things that you've missed and you want to hear what other folks have to say. And that's what we're here to do. So what we'll do first is give our review on the episode, and then we will talk about the podcast. Talk about the episode on the podcast, and then maybe we will talk about our feelings of the whole season and what we think may occur in season two. So let's go around the table and just give our review. So, Mike, why don't you start? Mike?
Are you on mute, Mike?
There we go. No, cat stepped on the mute button. There's like three different mute buttons. That's absurd. Anyway, I just want to point out that most of this crew is coming back for the Decimation of Dragons podcast, which is about the going to be the second season of House of the Dragon. So if people want to continue with us, they can. That's another venue that they can use. So yeah, I like this episode. I have a minor issue with the grand reveal, and I kind of knew this was coming because, like I said, Pam insisted that we forge ahead, although I slept through a lot of the episodes because she was like making me watch it usually during my nap time. But I'll discuss my issue with it later, because it's just kind of a silly plan. Yeah, they really did answer just every question I think we had at the beginning of the season. And, you know, down to the boot. And I'm just curious where they're going to go next season, although obviously in a very literal sense they've shown us where at least some of the characters are going. The series rocked from the beginning to end and left us wanting more. So, yeah, great as usual.
All right, sounds good. Kevin, what do you got?
It was good. It was a good episode, a good ending to a great season of a good show. And it delivered. Like I said last time, I'm glad that I was asked to be part of this particular podcast, because if not, I probably would not have watched the show. And it's just a good show, and I'm looking forward to season two. And if they did season two anything, if they do season two anything like they do season one, it's just going to continue doing really, really well.
All right. Sounds good. For me, it was a really great episode, just like all the other seven before it. Mike pretty much summed it up from beginning to end. It was really good. I do have one issue as well with the reveal, and it's actually with who started the war. And again, this is a spoiler podcast. In the video game, China actually launched the nuclear weapons first and caused the beginning of the apocalypse in the video game series. And so they've changed it up a little bit. Those nasty corporations, is what they decided to go with instead. But you know, it is what it is. We'll talk about some of that, and whatnot. But, otherwise, I was okay with some of the reveals with, the Vault-Tec, not the Vault-Tec, the Vault survivors in 33 and 31 and 32 and who they are. I thought that was fine. I just felt the one issue through the whole season is, how they, they changed a couple of things with the ghouls and stuff like that. But the main thing that kind of irritated me was, eliminating China as the culprit. As it is in the video game. So let's go with you, Sean.
I absolutely loved the finale for season one. This series for every episode batted 1,000 for me. And just quality and keeping me engaged with what was going on, quality of presentation and music and all that stuff. So I was, I felt it was punchy in what it was revealing, and I'm excited to see what they're going to do with season two.
All right, sounds good. And Barrett, what do you got?
Yeah, I really like this episode a lot. I have one minor thing I didn't like. Probably no one else cared about it, but it bothered me. But we'll get into that later. It was pretty much at the end of the episode and how they left things. But the episode, again, was a great episode, and I don't think there was any fluctuation on that throughout the show while we've been watching it. It has just stayed up to par the whole time, and I'm looking forward to a second season because of that.
All right, sounds good. I think we got everybody, so that's our feelings on the episode of Fallout, the television series on Apple Prime that we're going to discuss. The beginning is the name of the finale. All right, so with that, I guess we can get into anything and everything we want to talk about. So again, spoilers, everything's good. All our listeners have
Bill,
seen. Yes.
Bad people are bad. As was shown in this episode. In regards to when we were questioning what was happening with Coop's wife, and
yes,
she revealed her.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's no, question in my mind that she's a sociopath.
Well, she's the one leading the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
So,
and just.
We find that out.
And the delivery of it. And I like how they had the gimmick of having him with the earpiece and then having to interact with Henry. But just the way she's just so matter of fact. All that matters is us. No competition. And that's always a good way to build up an empire, right?
Yeah, no. I would like to add to that, Sean. I concur 100% with you because a sociopath is insane in many ways, even if they can think and work in normal society.
She's insane.
But they also do terrible things without consequence. And for her to want this empire of corporations of taking over by destroying everybody else is completely insane, as you just
it
said.
Is.
Yes,
it's insane.
And so I'm on board with you that she's not only insane but also pure evil. But Mike, you were going to say something.
Well, evil is evil, but evil doesn't have to be stupid. And this is one of the dumbest plans I think I've ever heard from a supervillain.
I got to agree with that too, Mike. I think it's a stupid plan as well.
Because this is literally about just
outlasting
the competition. And
rather than China.
Say that again?
I said it's the evil corporations instead of China now.
Well, no, I mean, I could make an argument, certainly, with an evil corporation dropping a bomb to get people to buy more vaults and to, you know, help outpace the competition. It also doesn't help that the competition in this is entirely mythical, meaning that we've never seen the competition. Right?
Right.
This is not like Cogswell Cogs versus Spacely Sprockets. Right from the Jetsons, where we even know what the competition is.
Well, the
I can't imagine
was
that
any
a whole lot of
person is alive who's not them. That's the competition, because they openly say that.
I'm just saying
I was just saying to add to what you said, Mike and Sean, which is what you said, Mike, which is it's the stupidest evil plan ever.
Yep.
Right, because you want to grab a share of the market. You don't want to destroy the market that's buying your product. And yeah, it's perverse. I mean, it is a now when you look at it at a different angle, which is that it's less about the benefit of the corporation specifically and more about imposing our way of life on others, which is kind of what she's talking about. We're going to remake the world into how we think it should be. Well, that's not about capitalism or free markets. That's top down control, no matter what kind of
megalomania
you're talking about.
Right.
But in that regard,
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, of course, that means radiation poisoning and all this other crap that makes no sense for such an ultimate plan. But go on, Barrett.
Well, I was going to say, in that regard, I agree with you, Phil. It should have still been China, because it makes more sense for an accidental nuclear war to create this than planning.
Right.
Planning for the end seems
dumb. When you say accidental, you mean tensions rise and then
right.
One person says, send the bomb. Because it
or one bomb gets sent and it starts everything off, or terrorists make a bomb go off and everybody gets into a nuclear war. Whatever, if it was
right.
China, however you want to
right,
do
right,
it.
Right, but you can argue that nuclear war is, if we talk using the analogy of murder, it would be third degree or second degree. It's not usually first degree where we're going to say, aha, I'm going to send a nuke right now and kill them.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
and you're not... It's more of a group organism acting insane rather than one individual person and some lackeys making it happen for their reasons, which make no sense.
They're a cult. They're acting like
right,
a cult.
Right, and this is a – if you look at most of the time and where a business makes terrible ethical decisions, there doesn't tend to be a widespread awareness as to what's going on. Or the ramifications are more easily dismissible, dumping chemicals into a river or something like that.
Or those people want to keep their jobs, so they would have gotten fired otherwise because they're not high up in the hierarchy making the decisions, things like
right.
that.
Right. Yeah. And again, I am not saying that businesses don't ever do evil things. Obviously they have. And again, businesses technically don't do evil things. The individuals in the businesses are doing evil things. If
the business
to split
just facilitates
it. Right. And the business is just, yeah, they facilitate it. They do it in the name of the business to help their stock options or to profit the company, or just they want to get around rules and regulations that they find stifling. You know, there was always some way to rationalize it. Here, this is just such a bug nuts idea that to bring in like four other corporations and all of them go, yeah, this sounds good to me.
Mike, example, a really good analogy to what you're saying is the movie that we did for Cinema a la Carte podcast, which was the Michael Clayton, where we have a company that makes pesticides, and a few years later, they find out that the pesticide actually causes cancer and can contaminate things they didn't expect. And so they have two things to do. They could tell the truth and say what happened, and of course they're going to be sued and they'll probably go out of business. Or they can be sneaky and try to cover it up and say that everything's fine and lie. And so what happens is that's bad and evil, but it at least makes sense.
Right. It wasn't that they made a drug deliberately to cause cancer.
Right.
Because in order to drive out the competition in the cancer market, it was we fucked up and now we need to cover it up because we don't want to get in trouble. And
or
I think
car,
all of us
cars,
understand that.
Yeah, or cars that have a problem, they look at the cost ratio, the cost ratio of fixing it versus not fixing it and going to court. So there is a logic there that they're following, whereas this doesn't seem to follow a logic. But this is also a cartoonish kind of story, so I kind of understand it. It's just, it's a little hard to get past.
But it's the cartoonishness is weird because it's completely different than the video game and this. And I'm not, again, this is an adaption, so, you know, whatever. But this adaption is supposed to be in that same universe, and it's changed it. So it makes it a little more confusing, I feel.
Well, I'm not sure
even
that
if
they
it
have.
Is cartoonish. What's that, Mike?
I'm not sure that they have.
Have what?
Changed it.
Because
all we saw was her say that they're willing to do
that's,
it.
That is true.
Okay. We didn't actually see them do it.
Oh, okay. So what you're saying that there's still a chance that they may have not shot the first nuke and it was China that did because of something they instigated, maybe.
Or they may have manipulated things behind the scenes. We certainly know they're willing to do it. And just for the record, if you are willing to drop the nuke to start the war, unprovoked, for no particular, when you don't have to, like, I understand you're willing. That's bad enough, right? That would be more than enough for Coop to be, I married a psychopath, right? I think that's
right.
I think we're okay on that. She didn't actually have to drop the nuke. That she's just willing to do it and being perfectly okay to do it as a first strike option. I think we're all willing to say that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
That rises to insanity.
And I'm worried that for season two, they're going to try to make her a sympathetic character, assuming
oh,
she's
God,
alive. Because I always make a joke about Star Wars, because I'm sure a lot of people who watch this show watch Star Wars, and I know a lot of people on the show are fans of Star Wars that do the podcast with me. And I always make a joke about how in Return of the Jedi, when they made Darth Vader become a good guy, it doesn't matter because he's already a mass murderer of billions of people because he helped blow up Alderaan and on, on and on. He's just a terrible
Jedi
guy.
Children.
Exactly. Yeah. but this was even before the Jedi
Wings.
We knew about. So he's a terrible human being. And fortunately, at least in that movie, they had his death and his funeral just with Luke. Because Luke understands. Because
that is as redemptive as it could be, right?
Exactly. So that was good. So if they try to make this character sympathetic or something in the next season without something like how Star Wars did it, where we feel sorry for him, whatever, and yeah, he did good because he killed the Emperor or whatever. Even though he didn't kill the Emperor because they brought him back. It's so stupid. But either way,
they brought him back somehow.
It's just so stupid. All those. Anyway, Mike. But either way, we could understand it, but I still knew that he was a fucking scumbag. And so I hope they don't go a route where they don't make her.
Yeah, and like that scene, Phil, it's like a son forgiving his father for all the things he's done, the father he's never known. All those victims weren't forgiving him.
Right.
And yes, he atoned, so he became this nice Force ghost, but yeah, there is no redemption from what he did.
Right. And And I will also say this. Now, again, her willingness to do this and planning to do this is psychotic and psychopathic and betrays her something of her mental state and her character. I will, however, say that there is a difference between planning to do it and actually doing it. Right?
Oh,
there's
hell
a difference
yeah.
between planning on killing someone and actually pulling the trigger. Because yep. sometimes you may really want to do it, but just you're not able to go through it in the end. So I'll give her some smidgen of leeway there.
Yeah,
not enough to make it a redemptive thing.
I don't think it matters because it's like, you know, like let's say, and I'm going to use the example, Z of China. He's not the one that's going to be pressing the button. Someone else
but he still gives the orders, right? It's
right. Right.
I'm just saying it's like if it's one thing to say, you know what, it'd be a great thing to get rid of all the Uyghurs. And say, on second thought, it sounded good when we were chatting about it last night, but, now that I've sobered up a little bit, I don't think I can go through with it. You know, that's a difference. There's a difference between wanting to do something and actually doing it. Between, you know, threatening to kill somebody and actually putting the gun to their head and pulling the trigger.
Yeah. No, I concur. I've always felt it was weird that people can be arrested for conspiracy even though they never did anything. In other words, you can conspire to do something horrible, but you could just put it away in a folder and burn it and you did nothing wrong. All you did was conspire. But you can still get arrested for conspiring, and I've never liked that. However, it does make question your integrity and morality for sure. But
if I understand the law correctly, you actually have to take steps.
Yeah, you have to take steps.
Plan to blow up the local bridge. But if I never act on it, there's not much that they can throw at me.
Right.
But if it's revealed that I've drawn up plans, I've
bought
built
things
bombs,
to build the bomb. Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're sitting, and I just haven't gotten around to doing it or changing. Now, at the
be arrested for building bombs and buying bombs, not for conspiring. So I always felt them stupid. But
because one person out of a conspiracy could be the one to buy the stuff. You'd still hold the other people accountable that are planning it.
Right. Well, I concur. Absolutely.
Okay.
But,
I'm just misunderstanding.
Right. But if they didn't, but you would be arrested for the bombs, not for. You should be arrested for buying the bombs or making the bombs, I feel, not for conspiring. But in this
they didn't buy it. They were part of the plan to buy it. They had one person that bought it. So they have laws to get those people.
Yeah, but that's the same type of law that if you're in a bank robbery and someone shoots somebody, but it wasn't you, you still are charged for murder. And you see what I'm saying? So I'm good with that. I'm good with that.
Well, that's why you have a jury, and that's why you have a trial, and these things come out then, and it's and the jury can hopefully decide.
But then you got lawfare, and some people are arrested for no
reason. Yeah, I'm not going to go down that path.
No.
Talking about normal people, Phil. We're not talking about getting into high profile figures.
I'm not. I'm talking about conspiracy. So you can have a bunch of people down the road from you be arrested. And for conspiracy, and they didn't do anything except for conspire.
Well, except for conspire. But conspiring to do something bad is still bad, and you're not going to say, I know you're planning on doing something awful. I'm going to have to wait for you to do it before we arrest you. Now, understanding, if I'm arrested for conspiring to blow up the bridge, I am not getting punished the same as I would have had I actually blown up the bridge.
That is true.
And had I blown up the bridge, I'm going to be punished differently if all I did was blow up the bridge in the middle of the night when nobody's on it versus blowing up the bridge people actually are on it.
But I'm arguing,
intentionally or not.
I'm not arguing any of that. I'm arguing that conspiracy shouldn't even be a crime.
Yeah, I don't know that I can agree with that. It's not an easy thing to convict somebody on. I think there's a lot of steps along the way that have to be checked.
But I don't even like the fact that you could be even arrested for it because that begins
the
lawfare.
A lot of people that are.
Yeah. If your wife was planning to kill you, you'd be glad that, you know, she could be arrested for conspiracy if she hired a hitman or something, or and well, somebody what, led, you or somebody hitman, or somebody I, led her to the hitman. That person should be in trouble too.
That's more than conspiring. I'm talking about conspiring where you're just talking about it or writing it on paper.
Taking the steps.
That's not taking the steps. Right. There's nobody that's getting arrested and tried for that.
For this company here, this Vault-Tec company, they have all the steps in place.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
When you've gone so far to draw plans and invite people into it, and that is what's taking up.
They're in the process of creating the conspiracy in what we see.
Yes.
They're actively creating a conspiracy by adding even more people to it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a weird thing because first of all, it's just ridiculous B movie nonsense because it makes no sense. Like you said, Mike, it's the stupidest evil plan in the history
of
the world.
It is dumb. Yeah.
I mean, it's even dumber than some of the James Bond stuff, villain stuff, but or even Mission Impossible or any of those, you know, movies, franchises. But here, they have, I don't know what they it's like you said, Mike. It's like, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's horrible what they're talking about, and I think it's more the morality than the illegal stuff at the point where Cooper just finds out what's going on, because the morality part is he's finding out that not only his wife but all these other people are basically happy and okay with mass murdering animals, trees, people, destroying cities, technology, everything. They're insane. They're absolutely evil and insane. And whether or not they do conspire and actually do it or not, it doesn't matter because they're evil and insane. They're just horrible human beings, I feel. And it's just disgusting.
Yeah. I think that's the point.
I think we all agree with that, yeah.
But it's all now. The fact is that we are also living in a bit of a cartoonish universe,
right? Yeah. It's like I said, B movie madness. Yeah.
So,
yeah, this is all cartoonish for sure. Absolutely, which is fine because again, this is like midnight movie type of
and
show.
And that's the only thing that lets me let it go a bit because of that. If it were something a little more serious, I'd be like, "What? Come on!"
Right. Yeah, I would concur with that. So I think, I mean, there's a lot of interesting aspects in this show, tonight's episode that we're talking about. But I do have to think, even if it is cartoonish, the most interesting part is all the flashbacks from before the war. I feel I like that part the most because yeah. I love my sociopaths and cluster bees in horror films and stuff like this and science fiction stuff like this. And we get a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, we do.
And I like the journey too that Ella Purnell, because that's the actress who plays Lucy, right? I believe. The journey that she goes through and the array of emotions in this one episode, and the way she shares them, that was believable. And just like, how shattered would you be to go through all of that, right? And I just want to give her credit for just like doing an absolute amazing job.
Yeah.
Well, I concur 100%. But I mean, if you're an actress at this level, how hard is it really? You know what I'm saying?
And
you have
multiple.
He's improved considerably since his early days. But and again, he was originally a comic type actor and then he became, you know, action hero and drama and stuff too. But generally, you would expect that type of emotion. And so I'm with you, Sean. It's just that nowadays, having watched films now for podcasting for over 11, since 2011, things like this don't impress me as much because I expect it. If you know what I'm saying, I expect good acting at this point, especially at a product that isn't independent. But I do see what you're saying.
Well, she really does the character. There's a lot of revelation, a lot of shit dumped on her. And weirdly enough, it's happening storytelling-wise at the same time it's happening to Cooper, right? That Cooper's finding out his wife is a horrible human being, and she's finding out that her father, that we've spent the entire season, even if it's been kind of on the back burner, trying to rescue. And that's been her goal. And yes, we, because we've been seeing what's going on in Vault 31, 32, 33, we know that there's something weird going on and that the father's probably somehow involved. But the idea that he isn't just a cog, like, well, I mean, he's kind of a cog in the wheel, but, that he's the one that blew up Shady Sands. I think we all knew that the mom was probably killed, and that he probably had a hand in it, or a hand in covering it up.
I watched ahead, so I knew stuff was going on. But I wasn't expecting the father to be a villain until, you know, all the pieces began to fill in as we went. And
yeah,
and this episode just laid it out.
Yeah, but this is, we knew that. She didn't, right? We knew a lot of this was coming. She had no idea.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is, yeah. And then you find out the whole time, you have this very villain, you know, the super villain thing going on where she's there at the table and there's just for no particular reason, there's a ghoul chained up at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was a way on the nose. I mean, they didn't even have to have her there, but they just did it for
dramatic purposes. That little twist of cruelty to her, to the story, because, you know, knowing that the ghoul is her, finding out that the ghoul is her mom. Now, I don't know why she would leave her like that.
Because Moldova, or whatever her name is, she's a sociopath too. I think she's a scumbag as much as the rest
I think she loved her.
I was going to say. So there was a romantic thing that I thought was happening between
Rose
and... Yes. And that's why I thought... Yeah. Because, yeah, like, I'm thinking, like, this woman is crazy to be keeping a ghoul around and, like, with the way she's acting. But then if the idea was that they were in love, again, it's not justifying, but it's like making a little bit of sense from that. So,
okay, but I don't know where did other people see that? I didn't see that at all.
I didn't pick up on that, but Barrett did. So, but here's Kevin, did you pick up on that?
That they were gay lovers?
No, I didn't say gay lovers. Just that they loved each other. I can't say that they were lovers. I'm just saying, you know, sometimes there are friendships that go beyond friendship that are not.
All right. If you go on that, if you're talking, when you say
there was
love,
there was a close relationship between them.
No. But nowadays, in 2024, when you say love, especially in June, it means.
I don't care what it
means. You don't
mean.
No. But it confused me. I'm talking about. So when you said love, you're talking about friendship.
Something beyond friendship. But they weren't necessarily sexually active together.
Yeah.
We don't know that from what we've seen.
I
just felt a connection between them. Well, I don't know what to tell you.
No. I don't know. What do you mean beyond friendship? What's beyond friendship? Is it family love?
It's called love, but it doesn't have to necessarily entail sex.
So it's family love. It's like a friend, your kids call.
I can't define it because the show didn't give us
friend auntie or something.
I can't define it because the show didn't give us enough to go on. All I can tell you is what I saw go between them in that scene where we see them in the past together. That's what I got the feeling that Sean felt was that there was something going on there more than just what we were seeing.
I did not see that.
Yeah.
What I saw was a woman that welcomed, Lucy's mother and Lucy to her place. Maybe it was also because they knew that she was from the vault. The vaults were things that she was against. So she was, I mean, it's kind of a bonus to take them in. She offered them a nice life. She offered them a good life. Lucy's mother was starting to discover what was going on with her husband and what he was up to. And then at the end, when she quote unquote, when the mother quote unquote died, maybe Moldaver just wanted to keep, almost wanted to keep her around for spite, wanted to keep her around. For example, even as a ghoul, she was still mentally conscious. So, it's not like, okay, she's a ghoul, she's brainless. She doesn't know.
She just turned into a feral ghoul after a while.
Like what we saw in that one drugstore with the robot.
I get what you guys see. I just didn't see the same thing. I'm okay with having differing perspectives on that.
Well, no, I'm not saying there was a romantic relationship. I said, maybe she just had pity. She had sympathy. She had, I don't know what, but I mean, for example, there was a friendship, and just because she became like a feral ghoul, maybe there was just that part of her says, I can't do this. I can't, end her, even though she's pretty much gone, but I'm just going to keep her around anyway.
Yeah. So basically what it is that Moldaver, was that one of the leaders of Shady Sands is my understanding. And so when Hank's wife decides that he's evil and discovers that he's evil, she tries to escape with the two kids, and Shady Sands, where Moldaver is the leader, let them move in and protected them. And since Moldaver knows that Hank is part of the same evil conspiracy of all the people like Betty and all the rest of them, she is even more apt to want to protect people from Vault 33, especially Hank's wife and children, because those people are her arch enemies. And so when Hank shoots drops the bomb, or however he sets the bomb off to kill everybody at Shady Sands,
yeah.
Yeah, that makes Moldaver become vengeful. And I see exactly where Kevin's talking about, because a lot of all ghouls, at least my understanding from the video game series, are normal before they become feral. So it's only a time, and each ghoul is different. Some will never go feral. Some will go feral in weeks, and some will go feral in 200 years, like the guy that Cooper had to kill. So maybe she wasn't feral right away, and then by the time all this happened, she turned feral, and then he could have kept her chained for a number of reasons. She couldn't kill her, or she decided, because it's Hank's wife, it makes a point, or it could be like you said, Barrett, and which is maybe she
actually Sean said it first, but. Oh, okay. I just agreed with him.
Sure. Or it could be what you said, too, which is she considered her family or something, or maybe something else. I don't know. But either way, that's all we know. It's one of those things.
I think there's whatever their personal relationship was before she got gold. Once she turned feral, I mean,
yes,
to keep her there and keep her there and chained up the table.
It's too on the nose. This is more of the B-movie nonsense. Yeah. Moldaver is definitely a twisted individual. I think whether she was created that way because the bomb made her flip out or the company made her flip out, she's definitely a better person than Hank and Betty, for sure. I mean, anybody's better than those people. But she's still kind of dirty, in my opinion, and it's just weird that she would be have the woman, the feral ghoul chained up too.
She turned villain when her whole city was nuked, right? Like major villain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because her people killed a lot of people in Vault 33. That was her invasion.
Right. Yep. It's,
you know, so she's a scumbag too. Those because
none of them knew what her dad had done. They didn't know anything about that.
Well, and a lot of it is weird too, because she Moldover knew when she went into Vault 33 in Episode 1 that it was because Hank's daughter was getting married, and this is the same daughter she was protecting years earlier when the mother came for help. So, and then to allow her to get married to this psychopath that, after having sex with her, wanted to kill her or who knows what he wanted to do, it just makes me not understand anything about Moldover and her
motivations.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because she could have gotten killed by that guy. I mean, he was trying to kill her.
Right.
So so part of Moldover's plan seems kind of on the spur of the moment anyway, because she didn't know that she was going to be coming after them, trying to get.
But it's interesting too, because when the people at the compound that she's at, they don't seem all super psycho like the ones that she used in the raid or the subterfuge.
Right.
So I'm like, it was an interesting dichotomy of like, how did she get mercenary psychos or like how
whoever she could pick up?
Yeah, right. Just like,
but which is weird because she knew Hank's two children were there, meaning Hank's wife's two children were there, who she at one time protected. So it was like, I'm going to bring these villains, whether they were hired mercenaries or part of her crew, to possibly kill them as well as everybody else. It was just weird. The whole thing was weird.
No, that's fair.
If anything, it would have been smarter if her plan was to have not invade, but have spies go in and then eliminate the Vault 31 people. But she didn't do that. She was just going to wipe out everybody. So it was very odd, I felt. Yeah, you know what I'm saying, Barrett? Because it sounds like what you said, it was like, it wasn't even planned what she was even doing.
Right? Yeah.
Because her plan was to get vengeance on and eliminate all the Vault 31ers, which was Hank type people. And so she got in, she actually got in, and instead of having spies, because, you know, she could have had someone marry Lucy, who was a spy, like, you know, we see in the Americans, that TV show, and have him be the spy there, completely clueless that he's a spy, and then, you know, they eliminate Betty and eliminate, you know, various other people. And instead, she went in to just wipe out everybody, even the innocents, including Lucy and Norm. And so it was just bizarre. I'm picking holes now in the plot because it's a little. There's definitely a lot of holes in this plot. But like you said, Barrett, you know, it's so good that you can just ignore a lot of this crap. So
right.
I try to.
Yeah, same.
One of the things that, even though they didn't directly answer, but it did answer, was, you know, how they got in, because they said they used, they used the mother's, Pip-Boy, yeah. And so how did they do it? Well, because Rose never left.
Yeah, she was a ghoul.
So she just took it off her wrist. But the one thing that I'm kind of curious about is why didn't Hank recognize Moldaver?
Yeah, I thought that was very weird as well.
Because, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, they had to have, I mean, she was part of the resistance, but at the same, I mean, I guess the two questions I have is, why didn't Hank recognize Moldaver, and how did Moldaver survive?
Well, I think Moldaver probably survived similar to how Hank survived, which is
Cryo.
I mean, that's the only way it could have happened. The only other way, she would have been the ghoul, and that's the only way you can survive that long. So,
when she woke up, why did she wake up when she woke up?
Right.
We don't know. That we have that little robot in the cryogenic area.
Yeah,
of that one cryogenic area, and there could be more, right? I mean,
yeah, you know what the funny part is of course, I watch everything on captions, and when that, you know, when the brain, you know.
Brain on a Roomba.
Brain on a Roomba, exactly. No, it was called Brain on a Roomba.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how they labeled it, Brain on a Roomba.
Gotcha. Right. But it's Bud. It's Bud.
It's Bud's brain.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think they wanted to spoil the surprise, like, so the captions, they didn't want to say Bud Brain, and sometimes captions do spoil things by accident. So I think that's probably why it was Brain on a Roomba instead of Bud's Brain.
That makes sense. Yeah. I bet you now, next season, it'll say Bud's Brain probably because the reveal has been given.
Or a Brain on a Roomba. I like Brain on a Roomba. I mean, that's pretty much what it was. Actually, that whole thing was funny. I mean, the whole thing is, okay, don't go into there. No, don't go into there. Well, if you do go in there, don't turn on the lights. Oh, he's going to find out.
Why isn't my training for conflict resolution working?
Yeah, slow down so I can stick this in you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah. Norm was lucky they didn't have some of the robots that are in the video game series that we haven't seen yet. There's one that's really cool that has this laser that and they run fast. And you would expect that a place like this would have had some of those. And then there's another one that's on tracks that has like bazookas on it and stuff. But for whatever reason, this place had no security at all. Not even like lasers or machine guns in the wall, because in the video game, they have stuff like that too, where, you know, you have
traps,
to shoot.
Right?
What's that?
Like booby traps kind of
things, booby right? trap. Yeah. They're kind of like they have booby trap stuff, which sends electricity out if you. And then there's also guns. I'm trying to think of the word. What do you call those things that, you know, like in Aliens, where they have those guns that would fire when anything came by,
like a Gatling gun kind of thing.
No, but they're mechanical.
Or heavy repeating?
Yeah, no, not the actual type of guns, but
okay.
the
they're automatic.
Sentry gun?
Yeah, sentry gun, that's it.
Yeah, sentries. Yeah, they're like little bubbles that hang on top of the ceiling, and when motions come, they drop up, they open up, and there's a little machine gun or laser gun in there, and they start shooting at you. So I guess they're called sentries, yeah. They're mechanical sentries or gun sentries. And they have those all over in Fallout 4 and Fallout 3 and Fallout Vegas. But here, they didn't have any of them, which was kind of interesting. So
still lots of vaults to visit.
Yeah. So no one locked out. Yeah. Well, it's not even vaults. It's buildings too. Just random buildings that you enter. And then, of course, the robots that we mentioned, too. There's really three or four storylines going on. There's the flashback with Betty, not Betty, with Cooper.
And then
there's Norm and Bud, the brain, or the brain on the Zumba. And then there's
Roomba. Zumba's the exercise.
Gotcha. And then,
come on, get it right, Phil.
Then Lucy's story.
And then,
of course, what's going on with Maximus. I think Maximus' story is going to actually maybe start turning more cynical next season.
And that's one of the things I didn't like, was that those two were separated again at the end.
It felt like the end of Empire Strikes Back. Separating everybody and having to search and stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Right. And I think that's what's going to happen, is that Maximus may actually now become really into the Brotherhood of Steel, and he may turn down the vault life and the girl and the marriage life because power or whatever military thing that the Brotherhood will give him in ego, I think he may take. And so I'm not sure. I think he's going to be more of a gray character next year.
Well, except that, well, Vader basically implored for him to take down the Brotherhood.
Yeah.
To use the energy to destroy the Brotherhood.
From within.
Who said this?
Well, Vader said it to Maximus before she died.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I wonder why. And that's weird, too. I wonder why she wants that to happen.
Because she doesn't want the warmonger people to have access to all the power, right?
Yeah. The Brotherhood of Steel is a really interesting and strange group. Yeah, because in the video games, they're not necessarily evil. They're just there on the sidelines, and their point is to basically wipe out all feral ghouls and mutants and raiders and insane robots, and they just try to accumulate technology and power, but they oddly don't really want to take over anything. Their only goal is to wipe out all the abnormalities that's had her in the world, and so they're kind of – like, you know, militaristically insane, but they're not really evil. It's a weird group, very weird. And I'm wondering if they're gonna change them to be truly evil in this. I mean,
well, I think what you see with a lot of these is.
Go on. Let me just say this one sentence before you continue, Mike, which is, I don't know if they are evil, if they do fight back when someone tries to destroy them in season two, if that's the case. But anyway, go on, Mike.
I think what you see in a lot of these, I think you can make this argument with the Vault. I think you can make this argument with, Valdaver, and I think you can make this argument with the Brotherhood, is they all have their vision as to what's best for society, and they are all willing to do kind of bad things
to make it happen,
to get it done. So right. Yeah, on one level, they all go back to what, you know, you said in the last episode or two episodes ago, was that a good bad guy doesn't know that they're the bad guy.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's the thing too, is that in this world of dystopia, there is no true law. And so for the Brotherhood of Steel, anybody that's not a Brotherhood of Steel is not necessarily someone that's going to get a pass by them. But at least in the video games, they will not hurt you or attack you unless you are a raider or one of those other groups that I mentioned. And so here, they may change that a little bit, and we'll find out. But they'll definitely be pissed if they get attacked, and then they'll have a right to fight back. Here, at least in this episode here, they were going to Moldover, who is considered, in their eyes, a raider, and therefore eliminate these people because they're insane and they cause too many.
Yeah, but the head guy
they weren't going there for that, though. They were going to get that.
They were going there for the technology, too. Yeah.
But the head guy was talking about getting the power back, right? Because he was lamenting that they didn't have the power and control that they used to, and that he wanted to regain that. Like, that was what he said.
Right. So, and that's, you could argue, is fair in this dystopian world, which is we lost our power, and now we have all these other groups that are like pests, mosquitoes.
It is fair. Things, right. I mean, you're part of a group. You want to be strong.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's necessarily nefarious, even if the show is trying to make us think or want us to feel that they're nefarious. So it'll be curious where they go with the Brotherhood of Steel, because the most of the Brotherhood of Steel that we've seen has been negative, right? I mean, Titus was a dink. Some of the people above Titus are a dink. They were apt to kill Maximus because he was trying to hoodwink them. again, in this world where a dystopia, you know, if you break their laws, most times they're just going to shoot you anyway, because that's just how it is in dystopia. So, but all in all, you know, in our eyes, that's bad. So I think they may be trying to make us think they're bad. I don't know. In Fallout 4, they're not necessarily bad. They're actually can be very good, actually. So it's, you can lead them to evil or good in Fallout 4, the video game. So it's just curious. Fallout 4 is a really interesting game because they have all these groups that could be good and all of them could be bad. There's only one group that's good completely, and that's the, what the hell they call them? The Minutemen, which is this group of people that defend, you know, settlements. And everybody else, the Brothers Steel, the Railroad, and the whatever the underground robot group is called. I forget what it's called. Either way, they all could be good or bad. So I don't know where they're going to go in the show.
Well, I mean, at the end, Maximus did not seem very happy about being, like, when they're saying all hail Knight Maximus.
He oh, the did Institute. Not the Institute. That's the one. Sorry. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
When they were all saying, you know, all hail Knight Maximus, he did not seem to be particularly happy about it. It's like he really did not want to be there.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, at this point, I think he is all set to go with Lucy and yep. whatnot. And, but of course, you know, once you sign up for the military, or in this case, the Brotherhood of Steel, you know, you have to fulfill your life, obligation. Right? Oh, well, I don't know for life, but definitely your obligation. Go.
It's yeah. more he couldn't, I mean, he didn't know where they were and he couldn't leave.
Yeah. Right, right. Well, and he also did it to save Lucy, right? I mean,
right.
And to get to her father, because his point was, you know, it's more important to get this head to the Kook Moldarver because we must save your father. And, you know, I want to do that for you. So that's, I think, was his ultimate goal, was Lucy. But then when he sucked back into the steel, he's got to decide what to do.
Yeah, she's gone. He has no idea where she's gone. His avenue to be safe right now is with the Brother of the Steel.
Right.
And he obviously is now like big time there. So I don't know. It'd be hard to leave that at that point.
Well,
you know?
Also, if you think about it though, he doesn't know, like, for example, Lucy left, but he was unconscious. So he might not know that she left, like, not willingly. I mean, he may suspect it, but for all he know, I mean, he got knocked out by Lucy's dad. Yep. You know, and now he's woken up. The armor is, I mean, the dad is gone. Lucy's gone. He wasn't even around to see the ghoul come in.
Right.
Because he was knocked out, yeah.
He was knocked out. So the only thing he remembers is, you know, Lucy and her dad. Now, granted, when he woke up, Moldaver's there. You know, and she turns on cold fusion. That's why I think, you know, she's talking about, you know, okay, let's, things like that. But the whole point is that we don't exactly know, you know, what happened. I mean, he doesn't know what happened. We know what happened, but he doesn't.
Right, right. Well, and even so, whatever Moldarver tells him, why would he even listen to her? You know what I'm saying? It's like she could say, you got to stop the Brother of the Steel, or you got to do this. You got to. It's like, you're a mass murderer, idiot. I'm not listening to you. He has no loyalty to her. I mean,
has no loyalty to her, but I mean,
but why would he?
He got, he kind of got an awakening when, like, the leader of the Brotherhood was pretty much just, you know, saying, let's just start afresh, you know, and, you know, he's pretty much seeing a different aspect of the Brotherhood, and he doesn't like what he sees.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think he didn't like what he saw even from the beginning. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're villains. But he definitely knows that Moldova's a villain. So,
I mean, they were shooting at him and his people.
Yeah, so I think Barrett is right on, which is he's just going to hang out with the Brotherhood. At least this is what it seemed to be, and you know, because of safety reasons, until he can get away from them. But now,
well, I mean, yeah, he's got a big good,
shot.
I'm sorry,
he may change. But
anyway. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. My apologies for interrupting. The whole, yeah, I mean, I was about to say he is now a big shot in the Brotherhood because they all think he killed Moldaver when he didn't, but. They, you know, they all think he did, and now, you know, people are saying, hail Maximus. So, I mean, he's got it pretty good, right now. At least with the Brotherhood. So he's probably, they're gonna, you know, he's not gonna really be punished or anything like that for a while, you know, for anything for a bit. And I think now he's probably very, he's kind of got it in with the head of the Brotherhood now. And so, and he even said, you know, I want you to be my right hand man. So he pretty much went from a guy that was about to get shot to chief of staff or something. I mean, you have like the head guy and then you have like the chief advisor. So. Yeah, he's going to be, you know, second in command of the whole Brotherhood.
Yeah, I mean, this is another, you know, B-movie ridiculousness because, you know, someone that was a nobody, it doesn't become a Superman number two when the leader has probably dozens of people that he would have chose before him. But, you know, again, you just go with it.
Yeah, I was...
Yeah, go on, Sean.
I was going to throw this as like a side tangent thingy, but I really loved the song at the end, We Three by the Ink Spots. It was so haunting when you're listening to the lyrics.
Yeah, that was just, definitely a wide turn. I wasn't expecting that comment. I don't even remember the song. Explain, Sean.
It was the song at the end of the episode where just before, or like Coop and Lucy come out of the graveyard or whatever, but it starts playing, and it's just, if you go back and check it out, or even just look at the lyrics, like, it was really haunting in the way it was placed, and I like, so it was like, that was something that I really enjoyed, because it was like a song I was not aware of or never heard of before, and I just thought, like, it, for whatever reason, it really resonated, so...
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah, that's cool. That's cool. I'll have to rewatch that.
Because the song's talking about, talking about the three things. So it's the three aspects of him. So he's talking about my echo, my shadow, and me.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's another, like, one of the songs that I know has been in the game.
Yeah, if I heard it, I bet you I heard it in the game as well. Yeah.
So, but I thought it was really good. So I really liked that. So.
Let's see what else. All right. Where do we want to go now? So I guess we can discuss that. Yeah. So Vault 31 is all the executives from back when Cooper was brought into the mausoleum to be convinced to join Moldova, which her name is Williams, I think, right? It's actually Williams.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Something like that. So basically Voltech has done this, and therefore in the modern world today, Cooper believes that his wife and daughter may actually still be alive because they were probably cryogenically frozen as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
I guess he wants to go find them. But all in all, we now know that everybody, including the one-eyed girl, that's Marion Chet or whatever his name is, Stephanie, thank you. She is probably an exec from before the war as well.
Her name is on the list.
Yeah.
What does that mean, if the name is on the list?
Norm looks at a list of people.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, it was on the list, yeah. So explain that for listeners. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, when Norm's hacking into the computers or looking at the list of people on the computers, rather in the Vault 31, he looks at the names, and there's Betty's on the list and Hank's on the list, but she's like at the very last person on the list, I guess, of people who've been woken up.
Yeah, and it makes sense because she's the youngest. Because right. The moment you wake up, you start aging. And so Betty and Hank, obviously, were woken up years ago or decades ago.
So she's next generation kind of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so Stephanie was probably just woken up within, you know, a handful of years. And it makes sense that she would be at the bottom and also the youngest. Even though technically she was probably the same age as Betty and Hank when they were frozen, which is kind of interesting.
The interesting thing I thought too was Hank when he's younger, when he's meeting Coop. I know like the face mapping stuff that they did to de-age him, but his eyes looked so creepy. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I didn't notice that, but it wouldn't surprise me that that was intentional through the same process that they de-aged him, they could have made something about his eyes that were a little weird. Or the actor could have just, you know, Kyle MacLachlan could have just done a good job too.
But it was interesting, like, when the reveal happened. Because, and then to actually have, you know, to see how the mind, or sort of how the mind works of someone who doesn't seem to care about ethics or morals at times, and just like how he's willing to justify anything,
right?
And it just, I thought it was like Kyle MacLachlan did a great job in the role, and I'm glad that they cast him.
Right. I mean, obviously they probably had a good casting service to get the correct people. Were you gonna say something, Barrett?
I was just going to say, yeah, he did a good transformation from being where he was trying to get her to trust him and that woman's a liar to being like all righteous about how right he was.
Yeah. I mean, MacLachlan, you know, he's been around for years. So he's obviously a pretty, pretty damn good actor. At one point was an A-lister and then became a fairly good character actor after that. You know, but for the whole season, from the very beginning when he was a really nice father and someone that, you know, everybody would say, like, oh, I would love to have that guy as my father, to finding out that he's actually a psychopath like everybody from Baltic, and then his turn to desperation at the end when he tries to escape and all this other stuff. Yeah, I mean, obviously it was a great casting of Kyle MacLachlan for sure. And he has obviously a wide range of acting ability, to have such a long career and he showed up specifically in this season.
He was also in, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a little while.
Yes, he was. Yep.
He was a bad guy in that one too. Mm.
Yeah, which is interesting because I always know him as a good guy, so it's kind of funny to see him as a villain.
Or his role as the crazy mayor in Portlandia, where he's absolutely ridiculous, but it's like, oh man, I didn't know he could be that funny, so that was kind of fun to see, right? Getting to see the actor expand and show all the different things they can do, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's, you know, known for Twin Peaks and the original Dune film with Sting and Blue Velvet, obviously. That was a huge
one. Wasn't he in The Doors too?
Yeah, he played Ray Manzarek.
Yeah. Yeah.
He played the keyboardist, Ray Manzarek. Rest in peace, died of cancer. So he's been in a lot of stuff. Let's see, what else did we want to talk about? If people even want to talk about the whole series now, because again, this is also a wrap up of the entire season, we can do that too. So whatever you guys want to bring up about this episode here or the whole season, that's fine.
There was one thing that was like weird that I was, when I was watching this episode, it's just because I correlate people's faces with other people's faces. But when Norm was in the vault and like exploring it, and then before he goes into the cryo chamber, he like really reminded me of Robert Carlyle from 28 Weeks Later.
Okay.
It was something that came across as I was watching.
That's an interesting, I guess analogy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kevin, you were going to say something?
Well, my whole question was, is the younger brother's name?
Norm?
Norm. Will Norm allow himself to be cryogenized, or will he somehow find a way out? Because I don't think he's going to be rescued anytime soon. So the question is will he be able to find a way out, somehow trick, brain on a Roomba? Or no, because the thing is, it's the thing closed, but this guy is also pretty good with the computer system, and he probably
Hack it or something.
Right, he could probably hack it, or, he watched where the brain of the Roomba, where he was.
I wonder if he would sabotage the cryo thing so that they can't go back.
Well, that, or maybe it could also be possible that, somehow he manages somehow to threaten the Bud's brain, pick it up or something, say, you let me out or I'm going to just smash you into the floor. Because, that would probably be, that'd be one way
to. He may not be one of Bud's buds then.
Yeah, it may not be one of Bud's buds, but,
Yeah,
if it were me, the Roomba thing, all you have to do is, pick that up, make sure you don't get injected, and just say, you let me out or I'm going to smash you into the floor.
Yeah, that is true. There seems like there's no defenses. And first of all, the Bud, the brain, has no defenses at all. There is brain robots in Fallout 4 that do have weapons and stuff and can be dangerous. But obviously this one has none. And also, there doesn't appear to be any sentry guns anywhere either. So you're right, Kevin. And I think Bud wants to survive the brain.
Oh, absolutely. Obvious he's thinking about going into the cryogenic.
No, I don't mean Norm. I mean Bud the Brain.
Oh, the Bud the Brain.
Wants to survive. So if Norm threatens him, let me out or I'm going to destroy you, he may have to let Norm free.
Right. Or Bud just said, well, whatever you do, if you want to escape, whatever you do, don't press that button. Okay, he pressed that button. Whatever you do, don't open the door. Okay, he just opened the door. Bud either could threaten him or he can outsmart him because I have a feeling outsmarting that brain isn't exactly rocket science.
What are you saying about Bud?
Well, I think Bud's a bit of an idiot, but also Bud has been pretty much by himself for who knows how long. He hasn't slept, obviously. So, all he does is, and he's mostly by himself, so he's just wandering around a relatively small vault and no one to talk to. So, I wonder if that brain's a little bit insane.
More insane than he was before.
Well, I don't think he was insane. I don't know if I would go as far as say he was insane, but
I would say he was in the sense that he was bragging about the armor that was defective, and he like scoffed it off when he talked to Coop the first time, right? That like he has no value for other people.
Well, no, I mean, I think he's just trying to, how shall I say, there are some people who they're not insane. They just either they don't get it or they don't care. You know, they just don't think about it very much. If that makes sense.
Well, and I get what you're saying. I just think he was insane because he was so in going along with the plan, right? Everyone on that board was insane.
Well, I mean, I think he's thinking about himself. I mean, I don't know if I would go as far as say he was insane, but more just, how shall I say, just willing to go along with everything because he's looking out for himself. Because I mean, it's gotten to the point where if he questions something, well, first of all, he seems like he wants to be accepted. He wants to be respected and maybe somewhat in control, but at the same time, you know, he doesn't seem to, it's one of those, okay, you know, here's a whole bunch of people that are going to die, but I don't know who they are. And it doesn't matter to me because, you know, these people that I know, these people that are kind of in my circle, they're going to live. And if I do everything right, they're going to respect me. So he may just not care, or he may just be more interested in, he may just not really think about it. And he's just more, self-absorbed. It's the best way I can think about it.
Fair enough. it was just a different look at the character or whatever, right? So, no, I get what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
What else did people want to talk about, whether it's specific to this episode or a wrap-up of the
entire
season?
What about the skull at the end?
What's that?
The big mutant skull.
That's a death claw.
So maybe we'll get to see one then.
Yeah. Well, they already kind of alluded that certain things like those robots that I mentioned, such as the Assaultron.
Okay.
And stuff, as well as the super mutants, and even and most certainly the Deathclaws are possibly going to be part of season two.
Yeah, the super mutants were the least subtle Easter egg I think I could possibly imagine.
The which ones?
The super mutants, where you had basically the guy from one of the companies, like, we could build a vault where we can experiment and turn these people into super mutants.
Yes, yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, they actually say it. Yeah, that's right. So we may even see that at next season too. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff we have not seen yet at all that are huge aspects of the game, which are the Deathclaws, the super mutants, and all the robots, those that are rogue or those that have grouped together at their own community or have become merged with humans. So there's a lot of stuff that we haven't seen yet.
And then plus whatever vaults they come across.
Which could, there's vaults are everywhere. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
But,
cause you said there was 100 vaults across the states. Over 100.
Right. And there was even a rumor that they're going to make, a future game that would be in London. So they could be in other countries as well. Yeah.
Cause that's one thing I was curious about as well, is what happens with, I mean, what's with the other countries? I mean, if Vault-Tec launches the bomb on the United States themselves, I mean, does that mean the other countries wouldn't stay out? They would probably come in and try to take over. Even if there's, you know, nuclear fallout, they'll still probably figure out something. And if they see people there, it's like, okay, great. Cause even, you know, there's some countries that would try humanitarian purposes, and there are other countries that come in and just say, oh, hey, we got a whole bunch of survivors, and they're not really that powerful. We're powerful. We'll make them our slaves.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm curious what happened with the other countries.
Well, they probably got nuked, too. I mean,
yeah, I'm sure they probably got nuked.
And there's probably vaults. I mean, there's probably vaults all over the world.
Yeah, that's where I think they're planning to go at some point.
I like the fight sequence that the ghoul had with the Brotherhood using the darkness and like talking and like using the defective welding to his benefit.
Right, right. That was definitely a movie moment.
Yeah.
Because something like that, he would have just been shot and killed. I mean, you know, a grenade they would have tossed or something. But of course, he's the hero, so he wasn't going to be killed. And then they make the typical Hollywood moment where he wipes out everybody. But all in all, Hollywood moment or not, I would concur. It was a pretty good, cool way.
Actually, I think my favorite kill of the episode was the poor bastard who was hanging on and he falls out of the aircraft.
Oh yeah.
And lands into the prop of the other aircraft.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah.
And just gets turned into the fine red mist.
Yeah, that was a good death for the show for sure.
Yeah, they were not holding back on the violence that they had, right? Or for the deaths, because like when you're looking at the different when they try to take the compound and just like the number of people having like very gory, bloody deaths on both sides.
Yeah. Everybody got wiped out. Obviously, the Brotherhood was going to win, but. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, but then the Brotherhood got wiped out by Koopa. So
I did like though that the bird or whatever the name of the thing is, the chopper thing that they fly in, like the CGI stuff looked really good for it.
Well, I'll say one thing too. It is exactly what they look like in the video game too. So it's pretty cool.
So I mean, I think throughout the whole season, that's their special effects and their set pieces like are so good, like there's no cutting corners in regards to the quality. Right
they call them just the airships is what they call them to my knowledge.
It was like they said wordy bird or something.
Yeah,
vertibird. That's what it is. Sorry, vertibird. So it's in like wreckage you find in Fallout 4.
Yeah, right. But yeah, because basically they do eventually have giant blimps.
Yeah.
And so we'll get to see them hopefully. In Fallout 4, you actually go on one. It's pretty cool. But the little helicopters, Brotherhood of Steel. And I'm looking that up now, what they're called. Brotherhood of Steel are called. Yeah, you could be right. They could be called whatever you call
vertibirds.
Them. Vertibirds. And that's exactly what they're called. Yep. Yeah. I should know this, but I haven't played Fallout for
a while. You've got other stuff going on. It's okay.
Yeah, I was playing it. I replayed it again last summer and early fall, but the last 10 months, you know, since October of last year, I haven't played it, so it's been a while. It doesn't seem like it was a while, but that was 10 months ago, believe it or not.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. But yeah, vertibirds. And it's cool in the game, too, because they land, and again, the Brothers of Steel aren't, they don't have any interest to kill you because you're not a mutant, a ghoul, a feral ghoul, or
a raider or whatever.
Raider, thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah, or any of the raider subgroups, which are there's a bunch of them. There's the gunners, and there's the Rust Devils and a bunch of others. And, but so that when they land, they actually help you. So, which is pretty cool, you know, and also you become friends with them too. And then you actually even can join as a knight, or a would-be knight in the game as well, because you join forces. You basically join all the groups except for the Raiders. And actually, on downloadable content, you can join the Raiders if you want.
Okay.
But you can join the four non-crazy groups, and then you have to choose which way you want to go, because it will determine your ending. And also, certain groups will get destroyed in the game, no matter what, because you can't bring peace to all four groups. But you can bring peace to a handful. So like, the Brotherhood of the Minutemen is the best group because they're not evil. So, you always want to join with them, and they have helped you build your
shelters and stuff?
Not the shelters, but the towns that you built, you know, the communities or whatever you call them. And, then the Brotherhood of Steel, are the one I usually join up with too, and stay with them to the end, and then I kill off all the other ones off. Because you have to. That's how the game is. You just have to kill off other groups. You just have to do it. There's no way you can't. So I always choose the Brotherhood of Steel and the Minutemen, because the Minutemen and the Brotherhood of Steel can get along, and the Brotherhood of Steel, the other two groups are like more insane. So, so it is, it's just interesting, how it is. So yeah, where else did we want to go? Anything else anybody wanted to bring up for about the whole series, if not the episode?
I think there's a lot that can be learned from this. I mean, it has an advantage, and I mentioned this earlier on, being an open world game, that it didn't have to follow a specific storyline. Now that for a lot of people worked with Last of Us because it's a very linear story and just was telling that story. But I think it's just, this is a world that there are lots of stories you could tell, that you didn't have to tell the story of Fallout 1, 2, 3, or 4, New Vegas, although obviously they're foreshadowing New Vegas next season. But I think just, I'll keep harping on the fact that they didn't drag things out, that they moved characters forward, that they developed the characters. Every episode, a character, if they were there, had a point. They learned something. They did something. They moved their arc forward. There's just fundamentally good storytelling going on. And all of these things, if you really want your show to work, you have to get the writing down.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll say this. This is in the production section of Wiki, and again, Wiki is a very fallible and not necessarily legit source, but it is a source. And what it says here, and I'll take it for its word, is Bethesda have been approached multiple times by the television adaption of Fallout, the video game, since the developer released Fallout 3 in 2008. According to Bethesda's Todd Howard, though he felt none of the suggestions met the vision of the Fallout series. Bethesda's marketing executive Pete Hines had also cautioned the company in 2015 about the potential impact of a poor adaption of their video game, saying, and this is where it's important, there's way more things that can go wrong than can go right with this, since the adaption's director may override the vision of the series.
Mm-hmm.
And Barrett and Sean know what that means. Examples would be the Stand television series, the Halo television series, and so on. Hines pointed to the example of the 2005 Doom film as an example of a bad adaptation. And Mike, I know you've mentioned Resident Evil, the film series as well, specifically after the first film. So,
mm-hmm.
That's the thing is when he says adaption's director, but you could say the adaption showrunner, it doesn't matter. The adaption's production company, whoever. whoever the adaption creator is, they may override the vision of the series and therefore the source material for their own personal vision. And we've seen that happen way too many times. And like you just said, Mike, prior to me bringing this part up from Wiki, from the Bethesda folk who made the game, this is a good example of that where this has not happened. One Piece is another good example where this has not happened. And even that Discovery of Witches was another example where that didn't happen, where the source material was honored and the director didn't override the vision of the series and therefore the source material with their own personal vision. And
what's wrong with all these directors doing it that way?
Well, they're idiots. That's the thing is you think there wouldn't be, but there's only a handful of Jonathan Nolans in the world.
Fair enough, yeah.
You know, and most of them aren't Jonathan Nolan because they're just assholes. Or it's like you say, Mike, where for producer puts their fingers in, or in what Bethesda said here, where the director is just a jerk, or the showrunner is just a jerk, and it's just how it is. It's unfortunate, but you are more apt to get lousy adaptations because of some asshole like the director or the producer or some various creator, because they think they're smarter or better than the source material and the audience that loves the source material. Never mind today's day and age of politics and various other things that unfortunately permeate everything. And so I could see how because the next paragraph says when everything changed for Bethesda when Jonathan Nolan approached them, and they were very satisfied with Jonathan Nolan because they had already seen his work with Westworld as well as with his brother's films that he wrote the scripts for. And so they gave Nolan freedom to craft the story as long as it remained true to the Fallout universe and so on and so forth.
Like, it should be a huge red flag if the person comes to you and says, I know better than the source material, or I don't need the source material.
Well, a lot of times they don't do that, though. Well, in this case, Bethesda lucked out because they were already prepared to be screwed. And they probably demanded all that information in advance. A lot of people, it's like, oh, wow, they want to adapt my story or they want to adapt my video game. And they get the money.
And they're looking at dollar signs.
They sell the rights and it's gone and they have no control anymore.
Right.
Some people keep the rights and are smart about it. So.
Right. But sometimes these people don't even have enough power to even get a choice. So it's just, thank God someone is willing to make my thing into a movie or a TV series, right? Because they don't have power yet, you know. But Bethesda's these video game companies are bigger, make more money than movie companies, so they can tell the movie companies to go fuck off. So when you have someone like that doesn't have that power and they do sell the rights, like you just said, Barrett, then the director comes in and does and says stupid things like Harold is the hero,
right?
You know, okay, which is the most absolutely stupidest thing that anybody ever said.
Mm-hmm.
Or the showrunner who says we didn't read the source material.
Bragged about it. Yes, exactly. And let us know who that was, Sean. Any
that
examples?
Was from the Halo.
Exactly. So it's just how it is. It's very unfortunate how it can go.
So, but the thing is, it's like when we get a good series like this, we can appreciate them that much more. So that's why, like, we'll always rave about One Piece, and then we'll rave about Fallout because they were both good series, like really good series, right?
Yeah. And I'm sure A Discovery of Witches was as well, even if we may not be the audience for it.
It was fun to watch.
But for the people who are the true audience for that. they thought it was fabulous and obviously matched the books pretty perfectly.
And we got emails for that podcast.
Oh yeah, yeah. We got more emails for that podcast than any other show we ever done, or any podcast that we ever done. Yeah, yeah. And it could be simply because of the audience type. Women were all, pretty much everybody who wrote us, and maybe women are just more apt to get involved when it comes to email and podcasts. And responding to podcasts and requests for emails. I don't know. Or it could have just been the devoted fan base of that series.
Which is fair too. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
We always welcome emails though.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. It was awesome getting all the emails for that podcast. And I kind of miss this because it was the same people that would email us, like six or seven women would email us every week and
then getting us to each to read it.
Yeah. Emails. Yeah. And we kind of knew them, you know, and once the series ended, it was like bummer that we lost them, you know, yeah, that connection was kind of cool. What else did we want to talk generally about the season and the series itself that, we want to talk about? Where do you think the series is going next year? Or whenever, next season, I should say. Because next season could be 2 years or 3 years from now. Let's talk about this.
We're going to Vegas, baby.
Yeah, we're going to Vegas. Yeah. So they're bringing in New Vegas. And that's kind of interesting, too, because I just I didn't read this part, but I'll read it right now, which is the next sentence. It said, Bethesda gave Nolan freedom to craft the story as long as it remained true to the Fallout universe, but served as its own unique story within the game series and not translate one of the existing games to television. So the question is, what are they going to do with New Vegas? Because that is actually one of the games. So is it just, they're just going to set it in that part of that city, but not actually follow the game, except it'll be in that universe. I don't know how they're going to do that. Or maybe by the time, again, this was written before the series was started, so maybe Bethesda was, after they saw.
Yeah, they were like, oh, you can use Vegas now.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what I'm thinking. That's what
Love
I'm
it.
Thinking. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking.
I would imagine that this is going to probably prompt them to more quickly come out with their next Fallout game.
Yeah.
The success of this show.
I was actually reading something today. So, because of like the success of the series and the series, as well as the, update to Fallout 4, caused the Fallout 4 sales to spike in the last month.
Yeah, they added some kind of new downloadable stuff or added or additions into the game that weren't downloadable but were there. I haven't checked them out yet, but continue, Mike.
So they're basically putting a lot more resources now into Fallout 5.
Yeah, I would think so.
To get it done faster.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope they don't rush it. A game like that, an open world game. Yeah. Because the other thing the same company is working on right now is Elder Scrolls 5, right. 6.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
5.
And
five.
We've seen the rush of a game like Cyberpunk.
Yeah, 6.
Cyberpunk 2077, you know, they rushed that and had too many bugs because they wanted to make it for Christmas.
Yeah, they wanted to meet the date as opposed to get it done right.
Exactly. And it turned out fine 4 months or 5 months later, but they got some bad press for that 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, yeah. Usually it hurts when you do that to yourself. Self-inflicted wound.
Yeah. So, but you're right, Mike. The company is pretty big, and they have other huge games like.
Well, they're owned by Microsoft now, too, so.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, yeah, that's right. They're a subsidiary of Microsoft. Yeah. But yeah, if I type in here and see what games do they have, and let me find it out here. What are Bethesda's most famous games? ? And let's see what they say. It says obviously Elder Scrolls series. There you go. Yeah. Fallout series. Yeah. Doom series. All right, there you go. Wolfenstein series. Yep. All right. Starfield. Yep, that's a big one. Yep. So yeah, they got some big ones. And Elder Scrolls, that's going to be a monster. So I would think that they have a lot of stuff. But again, now
there's another year of my life it can throw away.
Yeah. And then, but again, you know, Microsoft owns them now. So obviously they have even bigger backing than they did as an independent company. But yeah, something like that will be a year of your life gone, Mike. Similar to when you played Far Cry 6.
No, Far Cry 6 wasn't a year. Far Cry 6 was like a month.
Oh, really? Even that whole huge map of Cuba or whatever the hell it was? No kidding, man.
Like a month, maybe two. It's, yeah, I mean, that's not.
All right, you did well then. You did well.
Or yeah, it's yeah. That's a Far Cry game is a month or two. It's I don't replay it over and over and over again.
Right, like I do. especially Far Cry 5. That one was I played that one so many times. That game was so good. Yep. Anything else? Anybody? I'm surprised that no one wanted to. Talk about
no, what I actually think this was a very straightforward episode because it was a battle and an info dump, mm-hmm. right? The whole journey was pretty much over, and everybody was converged on the same spot, so there wasn't except for Norm. And it was basically just everybody basically getting told the answers to the questions that we've had up to this point. And other than that, it was, and there was a fight. And that's not a criticism. That's the payoff to the previous seven episodes. And they paid it off handsomely.
It's weird that a show would pay off stuff that they build up.
Right. And that just keeps stringing you along.
Right. Yeah, I kind of like that because that's the thing is that they paid off the stuff they set up and then now they set up stuff for season two. And, that's pretty good. So it's not like something like Lost where you have to wait eight seasons or whatever the hell it was. Or what's that show on MGM Plus, Mike, that, me and you were watching? What the hell is that called?
From,
yeah, that's it, yeah. Yeah, so that's another one that I think is going to be like Lost, where it's just going to go on for like 6 years or something, assuming the show doesn't get canceled, where they're not going to pay off stuff. You know, Westworld was another one. Nolan, you know, they didn't really pay off a lot of stuff on that. I mean, certain things they did and then whatnot, but this one they didn't do that. This one was fine. This was great how they paid it off, and then they set up new stuff for season two. So I'm good with that. It'll be curious if they add additional cast members. When I say additional cast members, I mean additional leads. You know, because like Game of Thrones did that, where, you know, season two suddenly had Stannis, you know, and he wasn't in season one, which makes sense because that's how the books was. But here, I wonder if they'll do that, where they'll just suddenly have a new character that becomes part of the lead next year. That will
be interesting to see. Interesting. Hopefully we get to have Matt Berry back for Cogsworth.
Right, yeah. See, that I don't have any affinity to this actor that you guys always keep on talking about because I don't know anything about him. But I do like Cogsworth because he is in Fallout 4 and he has that voice, very similar to that voice. And that's how he acts, too. And Fallout 4. Not just Cogsworth, but generally all of those robots. They do have some that change up voices for that type of robot, Mr. Handy's, or Mr. Gutsy's, or whatever you call them. The ones that is your friend, the one that you used to own before the war, is just like that voice. And then various other ones that you meet up that are merchants and stuff, talk that way as well. So no matter they use this actor that you're saying, Sean, it pays tribute to the game perfectly, even if it's not the original actor's voice.
Right.
Anything else anybody want? I'm surprised. I thought we would have a lot to talk about for the whole season and what's coming and whatever. But maybe
I'm looking forward to the next season. I have no idea what they're going to do. But I'm looking forward to Maximus, you know, getting more power in the Brotherhood and seeing, I'm actually looking forward to, Cooper and, Lucy hanging out and.
Yeah, it'll be fun there just to have the continuing growth of their connection, of their relationship as friends.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because still, even though Cooper is bringing her on, he still seems to be a little dickish to her. And also, you know, it's in real life, it's kind of hard, you would think, for someone, even for Lucy, to forgive someone like Cooper, because what he did to her was pretty horrible. You know, forcing her to walk miles with a chain around
and
her
then
neck.
He gave her away.
Yeah.
Cut her finger off.
Yeah, cut her finger off. Gave her away to be killed.
Well, to be fair, she did cut his finger off first, so it was just in response to that.
That was the first equal exchange they had in the relationship.
But that was a reaction to her being kidnapped and held hostage.
Oh, I agree. I'm just saying that.
Yeah. So I mean, he was pretty evil. He was. Yeah. He basically was going to murder her because he gave her to the.
She was a commodity.
Donors. Yeah, she was he was going to the organ donors, and she was dead, essentially dead in his eyes. You know. So.
Well, it's cool because she helps him find his humanity, right?
Well, that's true, but the question is, can she forgive him?
Well,
you know, obviously she's going to because this is a TV show, but in real life, it would be a little difficult to.
It would be different, but yeah, I get you.
Yeah. You gave me to organ donors, but I'm going to forgive you because we're friends now. You know, of course that doesn't happen in real world.
Unless it's the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Well, I was thinking that too.
Her attitude towards him did not seem like she was forgiving him. She was just going to utilize him to help track down her dad, I guess.
Yeah. They got a mutual goal, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because he's following the dad because the dad could tell him where his wife and daughter are. And she's
the head honcho that he wants to, who's behind all of this.
Yeah, whoever the head honcho is. I don't even know who the head honcho is. We didn't meet the head honcho, right?
He was a shadowy figure in the window when Coop's wife was trying to get them back on topic.
Yeah, so maybe they're gonna hire it could be a robot, or maybe they could hire a really famous actor, like Anthony Hopkins was in Westworld or something, to play it.
Yeah.
So that's why they didn't show us who it was. And then of course Lucy's going for answers, if not vengeance, for what her father did.
Yeah.
Yeah, because her father's evil. I mean, he there's one thing. Let's say that he was evil prior to the war, because obviously he was willing to do to participate. But after, even when he was good in the sense that, you know, he was a good father. He seemed to be anyway, and he
totally learned what he did to the wife. Yeah.
Well, that's the point. Exactly. So, and then of course she finds out that he nuked Shady Sands.
And that was in a fit of pique, basically, because his wife left him.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There was no reason to nuke the entire population except for vengeance against his wife, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. That's what it appeared to be, anyway.
Because it's all their fault.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you always sociopaths and cluster Bs always blame the other person for their own actions. It's your fault that I'm doing all these
things. You made
me
do this.
That's right.
Well, when we get to the end of his monologue, that, you know, we learn that about him. I mean, he is definitely off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cluster bees, man. They're fucking, oh, my God. I've been burned so by so many cluster bees in my life. Some that were really close, and believe me, they're fuckers. Yeah. Always
so tell
blame.
Us what you really feel.
Well, to be honest, I think pretty much everybody if you ask any psychologist or psychiatrist, they're always scared of cluster B personalities. They sure are. I mean, because when you don't have any conscience, or your conscience is your own ego or mania, That's just weird, dude. It's mean. It's bad.
Yeah, it's usually bad for anyone around them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And imagine if they ever get power, right? I mean, that's what's that's you know, scary. Saddam Hussein, Adolf Hitler, Stalin.
I don't have to imagine.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
They're drawn to the power, and they get to be in the system, right?
Yeah, and it doesn't mean like you know, there's a thing that not all cluster Bs are criminals because you know, a lot of cluster Bs become CEOs or politicians and no, that those people aren't a lot of them criminals, but or skirt rules, but a lot of them are just have a certain drive that allows them to make decisions that most people wouldn't want to, and such as Mitt Romney, where he laid off thousands of people when he buys up companies and they all get fired, and he can sleep well at night, you know?
Right, exactly.
You know, right, you know what I'm saying?
Like, that's the difference. I can sleep after I did all that. I have no problem with it.
yeah, exactly. Well, I would say I can't do this. I just can't do it.
And it's like CEOs right, getting their bonuses for laying people off, kind of stuff, right?
Right. So they're not criminals, but they don't care.
They're not operating in the same.
And sometimes they turn into criminals, like with the car companies that hide issues.
Yeah, or
you know, there's usually a person. Yeah, there's usually a person that at the top caused that to happen, because otherwise it wouldn't have.
Yep.
Profit margins and all that fun stuff.
And that's why I use that example of the movie Michael Clayton when I was mentioning it to you,
Mike. I have not seen that movie.
It's a good one.
It's good. With George Clooney, isn't it?
That is correct. And it also has Tilda Swinton, who won Academy Award for it. And then it has the guy that just died, Tom Hiddleston, who was really good at it. Oh, my God, he was so good at that. You got nominated.
Not Tom Hiddleston.
Oh, not Tom Hiddleston. You're right. What the hell's his name? Hiddleston's not dead. No,
somebody just had a heart attack somewhere.
Yeah. let me see. It's weird too because I love the guy as an actor, and I mentioned it on the podcast of that and in the bedroom which he starred. Tom Wilkinson.
Okay.
Yeah. And he was also in The Full Monty as well.
Yes, he was.
Oh, yeah.
He's been in lots of stuff.
Yeah, he died young. I mean, it's just a shame. How old was he? He was like 70. Well, it wasn't that young, but still 75. You know, nowadays people.
It's younger when we get closer to that age.
Yes, yeah. it is young in a sense because, you know, a lot of our musicians.
Younger than my parents.
Yeah, right. Because, you know, like Paul McCartney's 80, you know, and he's still, you know, while this guy's dead. You know, Joe Biden's 82 and this guy's dead.
No, 81. 81. Biden's 81.
Oh, 81. Whatever.
Yeah, he just turned 81.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. So it's just, yeah, so he did die in a sense kind of young. Yeah. For an older person, for a senior citizen,
that nature
died kind of young.
I think nature meant us to die earlier, so I don't call any of it young if we live past 60.
Well, it depends on the time period, obviously, but yeah. If we were just living in caves, we'd be dead at 30, like
right.
King Tut, you know.
Yeah, we wouldn't be making decisions.
We'll get diseases and die and stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else? Anyone want to bring up? Is it? All right. I guess that's it. I thought we would have a lot more to talk about for the whole series, but basically, what we do here is. You know, we're going to go on hiatus until season 2. But before we do that, you can still listen to us elsewhere. And Mike, what's that main podcast that me, you, Barrett, and Eric co-host that we do weekly that people can continue listening to us on?
That would be the Dark Discussions podcast, your source for horror film fiction and all that is fantastic, coming to you at a pretty much a weekly basis for the last, 13 years.
Yep, that's right. And Mike, you mentioned the other podcast that everybody here besides Kevin is about to start up in a couple of weeks. What's that?
And that's Destination Dragons, going to be covering the second season of the Game of Thrones spinoff, House of the Dragon.
That's right. And Barrett, what's that podcast that me and you are doing right now, and Sean's been joining us about a theme month.
Yeah, Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews, where we review all things genre, and in the month of June, we review lesbian art house films, one a week for the whole month of Pride Month.
But for our first film, we decided to do a little change. What was that? And it was just released today.
Yeah, we watched a comedy movie called Anyone But You. It was kind of a higher grossing film than I think we've ever done for this type of thing. It was a romantic comedy. It was LGBTQ adjacent. There's an LGBTQ wedding in it, which is pretty close to the main character. So it fit the niche of what we were trying to do. Yeah. And it just came out today. Yep, give it a listen.
Yep. That's right. Yeah. And it did, and even though it's, the reason all the characters are together to go to that wedding of two women, the film, so it isn't really like the main plot of the film by any means. It did get nominated for a GLAAD Media Award for Outstanding Film-Wide Theatrical Release. So they did recognize it. So, we didn't break the rules by doing an episode on it. The only rule we broke was it isn't art house and depressing.
Right, that's the truth.
Yes.
We needed a funny one for a change, so it was well received.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and of course we're having problems picking the second film because Sean's country of Canada doesn't seem to have a good range of VOD options like the United States, and there's a lot of good films that they don't have in Canada.
Lame.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate.
So in that case, you guys can go ahead if you got another movie in play.
But we don't want to do that. We want you to join us.
Well, I appreciate that, but I also don't want to be like,
don't look
stuff
for
up.
A way out, man. Don't look for a way out.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But it does upset me. Canada does suck because the films that they don't have are really good films, too. They're not like crappy films, and Sean can't see them because Canada has problems, I guess.
Indeed.
And let's see what else. Kevin, what's that podcast that me, you, Barrett, and Sean did about a television series on Netflix, which is another place where people can join and listen to us while we're on hiatus for this podcast?
We did. And a podcast called Boa Hancock and the One Piece, which is based off of the live action show on Netflix, The One Piece, which is a Japanese animation series. And they decided to do a live action for it. And it is, well, I wouldn't say it's like Fallout, all that in that. It's very good. All of the episodes are well done.
It's marvelous.
It's marvelous.
Fantastic.
Yes, it's
fantastic. Wicked good. Wicked good.
Wicked awesome. Wicked awesome.
Anyway, it's a fun show that we are also – that's also in hiatus because we are waiting for season two to come out. And I'm seriously chomping at the bit waiting for that one to come out because season one was so good and – I've been following the actual anime and I am still very way behind to catching up to where it is now, but I don't care. Anyway, that's what I'm doing. That's what we're doing.
Indeed. And there's a number of other podcasts that we do as well, or we have done that are either on hiatus or have been wrapped up. We did You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast. We did Cortana's
Communiques.
Yeah, which is a Halo podcast based off that television series. We did a podcast on The Undoing, I think it was called, the Nicole Kidman.
Yep.
And She-Hulk.
On HBO. Yep. Oh, yeah, we did the She-Hulk podcast as well. Of course, as Mike mentioned, we have a podcast that comes out at least once a week, and that is specifically the Dark Discussions podcast. So there's always something that's coming out that all your co-hosts that are on this podcast are doing on the network, Dark Discussions News Network. So if you do want to continue listening to us while we're on hiatus on this podcast, you have many options to do so. And you can always just go to darkdiscussions.com, and on the front page, right at the top, all the new podcasts that are dropped right there. So you can see if we're doing a new podcast or if it's a movie podcast that we're doing in a movie that you enjoy, you can just, you know, jump on right away without wondering, gee, I wonder if those guys are doing another podcast. Because again, darkdiscussions.com, which is pretty easy to remember. Their episodes are all pop up right there. For example, any one but you for the Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Review podcast just popped up today, and it just pops up right at the top. So, there you go. All right, so I guess we can give our final thoughts on both the season and this episode. So let's start with you, Mike. What do you got?
Yeah, really, really solid show. Fundamental storytelling, which so many things, both TV and films, have gotten away from. Good performances, good effects, and just a weird, idiosyncratic universe, obviously lifted from the game, as it should, but it's unique. Nothing else quite captures it in the same way. It's a show that has its own voice, and yeah, it finished it off beautifully, and I'm looking forward to the next season.
All right, sounds good. For me, I concur with Mike. There's a couple of changes that from the video game that were a bit odd for me, like the ghoul having to eat another ghoul, and China not being the first ones to drop the bomb, and Maximus's squire and what happened to him, that was a little odd. But besides those couple of weird things, the show really is in the same universe as the series as Bethesda had hoped. So the changes are not necessarily minor, but not anything that deteriorates from the source material. And that was the key for me, was to make sure that this series follows the source material, and it does really well. And as Kevin mentioned, similar to One Piece, that does as well. And when you do that, and it's good writing and acting, as Mike said, it makes both fans of the source material very happy, as well as people who know nothing about the video games and just want a good science fiction show. And this is a checkbox for both. And so, yeah, I recommend. And great season. Looking forward to season two, as Mike said. Barrett, what do you got?
Yeah, I really like this show. I like the season. I thought it was really well done. Good storytelling, great acting, good effects. Everything about it was great. And I'm pretty sure that it will maintain that when it comes into the next season.
Yep, there you go. And Sean, what do you got?
Absolutely love the series. So grateful we got to watch it. Love the cast, love the music, love the setting, set pieces. Just a high quality level to everything involved. And it's nice to have showrunners who don't think they're smarter than the source material.
All right. And Kevin?
Fantastic show. I mean, there was not a dud episode all season. And that is very good. That's a mark of a very good show, very well put together. One of the things that I just thought of is that maybe the reason why China wasn't the people who initiated the bomb was because they're trying to sell this show in China. China can be very picky about what they have in there. They're a lot more controlling than Canada. So, yeah, they did a very good job putting all this together. The writers, the directors, that they really thought this, the whole story from beginning to, well, end of season one, at least, And it's obvious that they have an idea of what they're going to do for season two.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, so a couple of things that were brought up earlier. So I can understand why Bethesda was very timid originally to let this become a TV series, because they are the ones that own Doom, and Doom they were burned on. So that makes sense that they brought that up as an example when Hines from Bethesda brought that up in that article I read. And also another interesting thing too, especially with how Paramount Plus, or Paramount, I should say, period, all of Paramount, is about to be bought by another company for, I think, $6 billion. The example of how much more valuable good video game companies are than movie companies. Bethesda in 2020, which owns id Software and ZeniMax Media and so forth, were purchased by Microsoft 4 years ago, 2020, for $7.5 billion, which is more than all of Paramount. So that just to put it in perspective, the money that video game companies are worth compared to even movie companies for as entertainment companies, video game companies can be worth much more than any other type of entertainment company. All right. So, that's our story for season one of Fallout. Before I wrap up, I'll throw it out back more to anybody else that wants to say anything else that we want to say, anybody want to say before we do the final wrap up. Anyone?
Thank you to everyone who listens to us and supports us in whatever way that you're able to, and gives us again the chance to be able to do this.
Indeed. I'll take silence from everybody else as they're all set. So that's it. So we will be back whenever season two reappears. We will either start right off with episode one or maybe even a preview episode, just in case they, the release date and we want to do an episode like a month before. And also it'll be curious to see if they do an entire drop or go the route of, a weekly release schedule for season two episodes. But either way, assuming China doesn't nuke us, we will be back for season two, assuming none of us kill each other for like rock and roll bands that suddenly don't like each other anymore and they just break up and dissolve. But we've been around since 2011, so that may not happen. All right, so with all that stated, Mike, why don't you lead us out?
Thank you once again for listening to Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola, a Fallout podcast. We hope to see you for next season if we don't see you or hear from you on one of our other podcasts. Until then, take care.
I know that I've lived a relatively comfortable life.
Stop! Mercy!
Vault dwellers are an endangered species.
I do not think you would be willing to do what it takes to survive up here.
If you insist on staying, then you will have to adapt.
Uh-huh.
So they say will be a lovely day. A bright new sun will suddenly break through. But I don't want to see tomorrow. unless I see it with you.
I grabbed a moldy one.